Hey, well, good morning. How you doing? This is the crew that ignored daylight savings time, made it to church. Fantastic. Good to see you. Welcome to Eastlake. We call this a church for everyone. We're in a series called Cannonball, and if you're new to Eastlake, just started coming, great weekend to be here. You'll learn a lot about Eastlake over the next couple weeks, more than you would have learned in months. But here's the main thing we're hoping. You'd learn a lot about Jesus and how he feels about you and what it is to have a relationship with him. A cannonball is a metaphor. It's saying that God can work with us as we sail through the air into different areas of our life, that we can pick up momentum and then hit the water and make a huge splash and the waves go out. Just think, maybe there's something in your life happened a long time ago or it just was recently and it bothers you. You feel guilty about it. Maybe you tried to justify it or ignore it or minimize it. I'm not as bad as that guy. But the truth is, it still bothers you. What if you decided, I'm going to cannonball, I'm going to go before God and be honest and ask him to forgive me, and it worked. I mean, it really did. I mean, you wake up the next day and you're like, it doesn't bother me anymore. Do you know guilt is like a rock in your shoe? You either feel it or you don't. And you know when it's gone. That's a cannonball. Maybe this happens to everybody. You look ahead into your week and you go, oh man, next Wednesday is going to be so stressful. I don't even want Wednesday to come. I mean, I have such a hard day coming. It's going to be so stressful. What if Wednesday morning you get up and you just said a prayer? God, this looks like it's going to be such a difficult day. Would you give me the strength and would you give me the patience? It isn't until later that night that you realize, wow, wait a minute. It wasn't nearly as bad as I thought. Now, like, I got through that day. Or this has happened to me before. Financially, everything changes very quickly. I remember when we had our children, or things happened with our house, or things happened at work, and all of a sudden, what looked like nice, smooth sailing, all of a sudden, now it's different financially. And I didn't really even do anything wrong. I didn't make any bad choices. I need more money than I have. Who's ever been there? You see what's coming at you, and you go, I don't have enough money to take care of all that, and the stress starts to come up. And what if you were to go to God and just say, God, here's my reality. I don't have enough money. I need help with my finances, God. And what if it was months later? And you all of a sudden realized, you're like, wow, wait a minute. We paid for everything and everything got taken care of. And it's like somehow that all got worked out. That's a cannonball. That's what we're talking about. We're saying that, like, when God catches hold of you and you catch a hold of him, you can sail through life, hit the water, big splash, and the waves go out. Cannonball. Now grab your books. These books are both a history and a vision of Eastlake. They're tell where we've been as a church and where we're going to go as a church. And turn to the week four. We're talking about breaking. This particular message, this whole series could be summed up in this one sentence. Just write it on the side somewhere. It's not in there. If we decide to give more of our attention to God, he'll do amazing things. That's what we're talking about. He'll do amazing things. And this topic this weekend is this: God turns broken into better. The broken things in my life can become better. And if you're like me, you just can keep the broken stuff over here. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want anybody to see it. I like to sweep it in a dustpan, put it in the garbage, and goodbye to it. I want brand new. But God isn't that way, because guess what? You can't erase anything. You know, broken is broken. There's this art form called kintsugi. And it's this Japanese art form. They got a pretty good idea on how to handle broken stuff. I got some pictures I'm going to show you. Vases, pots, bowls. What they do is they take the broken pieces and they put it back together using lacquer and gold. It's this Japanese form of art. And the whole idea is that it ends up better once it's put back together. It's more beautiful and it's better. Kintsugi. They use gold and they put everything back together. And it's just kind of a really cool picture of what it is. Here's what one person says about it. This is their statement, an expert. Not only is there no attempt to hide the damage. Who's ever been there? Damage control, you know. But the repair is literally illuminated. Is that crazy? That's a cannonball. God would take the broken things in my life, the things I don't want anybody to see or to talk about. He could actually illuminate those things. Those things could actually make a difference and be good things. How's that happen? Now, we're going to read a story in the Bible today to sort of shed some light on all this. Let me read you the first part. It's in your book. While Jesus was in Bethany, reclining at the table in the home of Simon the leper, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume made of pure nard. She broke the jar and poured the perfume on his head. So four people wrote a story about Jesus in the Bible, biographies, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. You can read them all in about an hour. And this is one person's take. This is what they saw. But there was another person that wrote about it as well and adds a little bit more detail. It's not in your book, but I want to read it to you. It was written by a doctor. His name was Luke, and here's how he writes about it. It's come up behind me. Now, one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, so he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. When a woman who had lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster jar of perfume, and as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured the perfume on them. Let me paint the picture. Simon the leper. So he's the guy with leprosy, bad skin disease, and he has somehow now not had leprosy, and he's still called Simon the leper. So it's when you have moved past something in your life. He's Simon the leper, but he doesn't have leprosy because he's having this big dinner party, but they still call him Simon the leper. Here's the question I have for you. Is there anything that's happened in your past, and that's what you're still known for? Or you still see yourself that way? Still your nickname? You know, maybe you're on your second marriage and things are going great now and you've learned from some of this stuff. And good. But in your family, you're still the kid that got divorced. So Simon doesn't even have leprosy anymore, but they still, his nickname is Simon the leper. And so they make sure you know what Simon they're talking about. And he throws this dinner party. Now, leprosy was not something you could run down to the pharmacy and get a prescription for. There was no operation for it. There's no hospitals. Remember, 2,000 years ago, if you had leprosy, you died with leprosy. There was no way to treat leprosy unless, and one of the things that Jesus was so known for, unless you got a miracle of healing. He was the only one that could do it. He was known for hanging out and going with people. He would size up circumstances that were so difficult, nobody else could do them, and then he'd get in the middle of them, and people would have to, in their mind, say, only God could do that. Have you ever had anything in your life and you were willing to just admit, if this is ever going to work out, it's going to only be God? Cannonball. So this person must have been healed by Jesus. Most people think he was. So he throws a dinner party. He's grateful. Simon the leper, and he invites the religious leaders to his house as well, and that's a clue that Simon is not doing a cannonball. He's kind of putting his toe into the water. You've got to play both sides of the fences. Think about it now. He wants to invite Jesus. Here's the person that's healed me. I want to have more with Jesus. I want to go forward with Jesus, but what will my friends think? What will my family think? What will the church leaders think? I mean, can I really do that? I mean, what about when everybody finds out? So he invites the religious leaders and Jesus, kind of that time in your life, you're like, I want some Jesus in my life, but I want some other things in my life. I'm not quite ready to let go. It's when I try to get Jesus to fit into my life instead of giving my life to Jesus. Are you doing it anywhere? You'd like Jesus to fit into your life. He seems great. I mean, he heals leprosy. I want him in my life, but there's tension. I don't know if I can cannonball. The old religious leaders are there. Maybe he'll ask too much of me. So he's kind of trying to play both sides of the fence. And then there's this woman. It says she led a sinful life. Now, in this day and age, that could have only meant one thing. When they said that about a woman 2,000 years ago, it meant not that she shopped too much, bought an expensive purchase. It meant she was a prostitute. That was kind of the courteous way of saying it. When I was a kid, they used to call a prostitute a lady of the night. And that day, they would say she led a sinful life. She was a prostitute. Do you know nobody wants to be a prostitute? You know, nobody shows up on college career day and walks around with a clipboard and says, could you direct me to the booth where you sign up to be a prostitute? Nobody wants that. Probably something happened, her husband died, or her family wasn't there to take care of her, or she got into some sort of a situation, and she did what we all do. She made a choice because she didn't feel like she had any other options, and it was a choice that she didn't want to make. You know how that feels. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be that person. I don't ever want to go there, but when you feel like you're out of options and you choose it. It was a tragic last stop until she meets Jesus. And can you imagine, just think about the scene, okay? Here's Simon trying to play both, says, "Hi, Jesus, you're so cool, thank you for my healing. Oh, I just met him the other day, I'm not sure about him. He's trying to work this room so nobody gets like crazy with him." And she cannonballs in, she's uninvited, she crashes this party, all these guys there. Now think about it. And she's known by all of them. This is her town, she's known as a prostitute. Can you imagine, just think. We have no idea what Jesus said to her. Nobody wrote about the encounter. We have no clue what happened, how she knew Jesus, what she saw, what was spoken between them. But we know this. Can you imagine how deep the forgiveness must have gone? For her to be able to walk into a room of powerful men and believe that she has something value to give? How deep the acceptance must have gone, how deep the love must have gone, that she can walk into a group of men now, former prostitute, walk into a group of powerful men. And say, "I have a gift to give, and it's a value." Here's the filling in your notes, right? Her gift represented her past and future, and probably did. I can kind of imagine how perfume and prostitution would go together. You know, I can kind of get, like, it represents her past. I needed that perfume. That perfume helped me attract people. That was sort of like part of my past life, this perfume. I can kind of understand that. But think of the cannonball. It says in the story that she broke it and poured it all out on him. That's a cannonball. I mean, she doesn't take any chances. She breaks the bottle. I'm not going to be able to put it back in there. And she dumps it all over Jesus. I mean, she could have come in, think now, toe in the water, not cannonball. She could have come in and just poured a little bit, you know, out and then put the cap on and said, "I'm going to keep this in reserve in case this Jesus thing doesn't work out. I may need this perfume. If I have to go back." But she doesn't. Do you know some things in life only change if you do a cannonball? I remember the first time someone told me about tithing. I was 20 years old. Knew anything about church, and I'd become Christian. I'm walking with Jesus, and I got a job, and I got my very first paycheck. I was so excited. I was so incredibly broke. I mean, I couldn't even afford top ramen. That's broke. But I finally get my very first paycheck, and I was kind of strutting around the house with a little bit. I live with these couple other guys. I had my paycheck. I said, "Hey, check out the man, you know, I got the paycheck, you know." And this other Christian that lived with me, I've been a Christian longer, and he sees me walking around and he says, "Now you're going to give your tithe on that, aren't you?" I didn't even know what a tithe was. I was like, "Tithe? What are you talking about?" I says, "Oh, that's the 10% that we bring to God that helps us know that we're connected to him. He takes care of us, and we give 10% to God." And I could feel myself with my paycheck going like this with it, kind of bringing it back around here like this, you know. It's like, and I knew right then that if I didn't do a cannonball, the next time I went to church, I wrote out a little check for a very small little amount of money. And in those days, they used to pass a little bag around. I remember when it went by, you know, dropping it in there and letting it go. And it was my cannonball, and I've been cannonballing for 37 years now. And here's what it's caused. I always know I have a provider. When sales suck and bills are too much and everything goes crazy and the reality is there's not enough money, I always know someone's got my back. But I had to cannonball, and I knew in that particular situation, and maybe she did. Maybe she was looking at the perfume. Maybe she thought, "I'm just going to pour some out, just half. Half's a lot." Maybe she knew, if I don't go all the way right now, I may go back to my old life. See, sometimes only a cannonball will get you where you want to go. Only a cannonball. Now, there's a dinner that took place a while in the future. So this event happened, and then just a little far in the future, another event happens, a dinner, and I want to read you what happens there. It's kind of similar to this one. I'll read it to you. It's in your notes. "As they were eating, Jesus took some bread and blessed it. Then he broke it in pieces and gave it to his disciples, saying, 'Take it, for this is my body.' And he took the cup of wine and gave thanks to God for it. He gave it to them, and they all drank from it. And he said to them, 'This is my blood, which confirms the covenant between God and people. It is poured out as a sacrifice for many. So what Jesus is saying, he's talking about the cross. He's saying, I'm about to do a cannonball that affects everyone. Everybody can have a forgiveness that goes deep. Everybody can have an acceptance. Everybody can have a love. And it's sort of the same sort of thing. He's talking about breaking. He's saying, but this time I'm going to do it so everyone can have it. He's talking about the cross and the resurrection, saying that's what's going to be my cannonball. And I guess in a sense, he's sort of talking about us, because this woman's story is our story. We all have a past with broken things. We all have a present, our context. I have my present. I have my job, my family, my kids, my friends. I have my home, my bills. I have my life. I have my future that I want to get to. Then we have a faith community that we live in. We all have our past as a faith community. We have like what's going on right now in our faith community, what we're hoping for in the future. We all have that. And it's like he's saying, jot in your notes, his gift represents our past, our present, and our future. Her story is our story, and we all have a past, present, and future. And Jesus stops, and he says to a room of people at a different dinner party, I'm going to do something that has an effect and a wave that will touch each and every person if they want it. Now, in your book, there's this commitment card here, and one of the reasons that my wife and I have taken this so seriously, and we've looked over every single line of it, and we're praying about it and trying to figure out, well, what's our way of responding to this? And it's because of this. Hear this now. When the woman brought the alabaster jar, she wasn't trying to do something for Jesus to get Jesus to respond to her. She was responding to what Jesus had already done for her. Now, if you've ever wondered about communion, because we're going to take communion later, you have the bread and you have the wine. You go, why do we do that? Here's why. It's our response to what God has already done for us. Why is that important? Because when you get that backwards, when you live your life thinking you have to do something to get God to respond to you, Jesus stood in front of a room of people. He said, just please remember this. Don't ever think you got to try to get me to respond. Don't try to do something to get me to respond to you. I'm going to settle it once and for all. I'm going to do the first cannonball. And you can decide to respond. Definition: religion in one hand, relationship in the other. Religion, you can find in any denomination, name any church group that you want to, anywhere in the world, if there's a religious spirit there, this is what it means. I've got to do something for God to get him to respond to me. That's religion. Whenever you see it, that's what it is. Relationship. God did something for me, and I want to respond. They're so different. And when Jesus did the very first communion, he said, don't get that confused. You probably will. So remember, I did the first cannonball. And you get a chance to respond to it. It's the essence of our cannonball initiative. It's why Clarice and I are praying about it. We're like, well, what has God done for me? I don't have an alabaster jar of perfume to give. And I can't imagine what that woman's life must have been like. I can't, the pressures and what she'd been, but I have my own life, my own stuff, my past. I have my own challenges in my presence. I have my own joys. I have my own dreams in my future. This is my time. It's my context. I don't have to compare it to her life or yours. In my life before God, I get to respond. As a faith community, we get to respond. I want you to check out this video, what this looks like as you play it forward. Kind of a really cool thing. One of the folks in one of our churches, check out this video.
I am Ken Huff, and I am 84 years of age. Ramona and I met in college at Kentucky Christian University. I sort of swept her off of her feet, so to speak, and we ended up getting married in 1954. and had, those marvelous 60 years together. Ramona passed away in 2012 as a result of Alzheimer's. Well, actually, I've been a part of Torrey Pines Church for 30 years. My wife Ramona and I came there in 1986. Great experiences over all of those years serving on the staff and with the people there. But in the last few years, realizing that some things really needed to change. And so through a period of studying, we came up with the idea of partnering with Eastlake Church. I think that the biggest thing that I find challenging working with Eastlake is the fact that they have caused me to do a lot of stretching, realizing that in this modern day that we really had to change if we were going to be able to reach the college students, the millennials, the younger crowd. We could not be like we were before. The thing that I find a great deal of blessing in terms of giving to the Eastlake Network is where they are and how their compassion for the lost, their compassion for our community, whether it's the homeless or the trafficking part or the establishing of new churches, that their ultimate goal is to see people want to Christ. And to me, that's what the Great Commission is about, is going out and making disciples. And that's the thing, the joy that I really have that I see in Eastlake Church. First of all, I am very committed to tithing, but the generosity comes over and beyond that. It is not saying, okay, I'm going to take a portion of my tithe and say that's generosity. No, the generosity comes over and above what we're doing now. And it is really stretching not only our finances, I think it's stretching our faith. It's almost like Ramona is still saying to me and urging me, Ken, you know, you must be generous in terms of your giving to the wonderful program of Cannonball, even though we may have other things that will come along later on. We need to be faithful in the things that are happening today.
Gosh, he's in his 80s and he's still stretching. And the other day I was working out with my son, and at one point he was telling me that he's not very flexible. He feels really stiff. And he said, look, Dad, and he was going to reach down and touch his toes, and he got like about that far. And he's like, that's as far as I can go. And my first thought was, that's not very far. You know? But I thought, isn't that how it is, though? When it comes to stretching, we all have our how far we can go. We all have our point where we say, oh, that's where it starts to burn. That's what Cannonball is about. It's saying that get to the burn place. Because when it starts to burn, that's when we look to Jesus. When it starts to burn, the fill-in in your notes, our gift is also to be broken and poured out for God's glory. I was talking to some friends of mine last weekend, a couple in the church, young couple, at least young to me, and they had this opportunity to move to another state. They may move to another state. They're talking about what they might do. And the girl said something to me as she was talking. She goes, you know, the only thing keeping me here is this church. And I started thinking about that throughout the week, and I thought, gosh, you know, I remember when she first came to Eastlake. I remember the first time she walked in the door and wobbly, you know, trying to get things together and single mom and just sort of trying to get her feet underneath her and, you know, up, down. And then I remember when she had met this guy, and I remember the first time she brought him to church, you know. And he's like trying to be polite, but you could kind of feel it when he came in. you could kind of feel the vibe off him, like, I don't know if I really want to be here, and I don't know how this is going to work out for me. I mean, you could just kind of feel the vibe off him, like, I don't know about this, you know. And then I saw him when he left, and he seemed better, you know. He seemed like, I wasn't so bad. He's like, you know, and it was only an hour, you know. He's just, you know, he kind of gets through it. And then I saw him come a few more times. And then I saw God start to bring this family together. I saw his dad's heart come out for what would be his daughter. You know, no step. I've never heard him say step. And then I see this family come together, and then they get married. I just have kind of watched the journey as God has kind of brought this whole thing together. And I thought, gosh, you know, there it is. There it is. That's Kensuke. As God takes all the broken stuff and he does something with it, it's so much more beautiful now. And that's what it is to be a part of a faith community. That's East Lake. That's any great place that's worshiping Jesus. This is the place you can come and all the broken stuff, it can turn out so much better. This is how the Bible says it. Live clean, innocent lives as children of God, shining like bright lights in the world. That's a church. It's a bright, shining light where everybody can go and go, really? The world's full of crooked and perverse people. Hold firmly to the word of life. Then on the day of Christ's return, I will be proud that I did not run the race in vain and that my work was not useless. But I'll rejoice even if I lose my life, pouring it out like a drink offering, a liquid offering to God, just like your faithful service is an offering to God. And I want all of you to share that joy.